we started with the shocking news this morning that for the second time in a week, a very prominent personage, this time Anthony Bourdain, who has, of course, been a fixture on CNN for many years, and his cookbooks have been bestsellers, was found dead in his hotel room in France, apparently by his own hand. We're told that he hung himself. And just a couple days ago, Kate Spade, of course, took her own life. To talk to us about this sad story and what is becoming a major crisis in America. Suicide rates up 30% since 1999, according to the CDC. To talk to us about this is the clinical psychologist, Dr. Judy Ho. Welcome aboard. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Okay. We've been speculating, and that's all it is, reckless speculation on our part, because what do we know, about why there would be such an uptick in suicide since 1999. And I would think that prescription drug abuse, illicit drug abuse, is a contributing factor. But along with that is, I believe, the social media pressure has contributed mightily to an uptick in suicide. But again, that's a shot in the dark from non-professionals. And I'm curious as to what you think about this, Dr. Judy.
Well, Doug, I think you listed two very important factors. And I think there's a few other ones as well. You know, I do see that mental illness has also been on the rise, particularly depression and anxiety. And I think what is startling about these statistics is that before we were saying, okay, we see the rise, we see the mental illness rise, and particularly the suicide attempts rise among teenagers. That was already concerning enough. Now we're seeing that it's really across the board, cutting across socioeconomic lines. And in fact, now the highest risk group in this new set of statistics is actually this middle age group. And both Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain are part of this group. And some of the other factors are, you know, issues related to sometimes financial stress, sometimes stress to sort of keep their career going, or like losing their identity as people sort of roll into middle age and are thinking more towards retirement and their careers winding down. And if their identities were tied up in that, that can sometimes cause the onset of depression, which of course is not always leading to suicide attempts, but as we know, is a huge risk factor for
now,
suicide attempts.
You know, I was just talking in the hallway, and all the women working on the show this morning have been speaking with one voice on this. Leanne here and Sharon out there, Sharon Reardon. Anybody who's got kids and has never suffered from clinical depression or had a suicidal thought in their life, they might have had homicidal thoughts, but never suicidal thoughts. But it's literally, I think, beyond the capacity of people who have kids and have never had this problem to understand how somebody could do this. How could you do this and leave your teenage daughter to fend for themselves? I mean, how could you do it? And people don't understand the depth of suffering. Because
despair or whatever it is.
Whatever that pain is has to be so great that you could do something that goes against biology.
Absolutely. And in fact, depression is related somewhat to biology. You know, there's obviously a lot of research that shows that depression, sure, that can be situational, but that oftentimes there is an underlying chemical basis for depression, that there are certain issues such as decision-making problems, and people aren't really actually really in their best mind when they're depressed. They really can't see straight. They really can't think straight. And I think that's the thing when you haven't known anybody or if you yourself haven't suffered from depression, that is how pervasive it is. And also, this is something that I always talk to my clients and their families about, which is that, you know, when somebody is depressed, they can't really see past the moment. They really can't see that things might be better in the future. And also, depression makes you temporarily egocentric, not in a narcissistic way, but just you're so wrapped up in your own suffering, you can't even really conceive at that moment somebody else's suffering based on your actions.
It's not uncommon for people who kill themselves to be hiding in plain sight. And you could, this is a perfect example. Anthony Bourdain was a very public personage, and he wasn't catatonic, locked away someplace. He was in France with a crew that he had worked with for years.
In the middle of a shoot.
In production. So, and yeah. This seems like so counterintuitive. Well, how is that possible? Well, you could be highly functional in your professional life, but when you are left alone in your private space inside your head, and here it is. I mean, I'm sure that Anthony Bourdain had phone calls coming in and was getting emails, was interacting with producers and his DP,
call times,
the whole nine yards. And yet, in the few hours alone in the hotel room, he managed to plunge into such unspeakable darkness that this could be the net result.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're touching on now is probably the level of stress people who are in the public eye have to sort of keep this under the radar. I mean, as much as we have progressed in so many different ways, I think our society still really shuns people with mental illness, even something as common as depression. I mean, we're not even talking about, you know, the more serious mental illnesses, which of course still carry lots of stigma with them, such as schizophrenia, but people are still afraid to admit that they even have depression. And I think when you're a public person, your brand, your image, you know, people around you, they look up to you. Perhaps there's even another level of stress that you have to keep this under wraps. And, you know, the more that you isolate yourself and keep these thoughts to yourself, the more they're left unchecked. You know, people with depression, they often have very distorted thoughts about the way the world works. And if you're not talking to a family member who's kind of shaking you out of it and saying, hey, that's not the reality, let's go get you some help, it's really dangerous where your own thoughts can go, especially when you're in your private room.
You know, sometimes it's like with Kate Spade, you know, the more news that's coming out, it seems like those closest to her, her sister or husband, said, you know, we knew something was going on, she was seeking help. So maybe the people closest to you have to be, you know, really on top of things and trying to help you get help. But I'm just curious, do you know, I don't know if there's a statistic or if they know that with suicide, is it triggered because something happened? Like maybe did his girlfriend call him that night and want to break up and that's why they do this? Or is this like an ongoing thing and they've been thinking about it for a long time? Do they need a catalyst or is it just a spontaneous thing?
Well, that's a really good question. I think really people who complete suicide can generally sort of be sorted into two broad categories. One type is the type of person who, because they are experiencing an acute stress, you know, something that just happened to them, a big stressor, divorce, job change, fight with somebody, that's an impulsive thing that they
right.
do.
Right, and we saw that, for instance, famously when the market tanked in 1929 at the start of the Great Depression. Brokers jumped out the window of their buildings, and it happened a lot where people have
absolutely
a trauma and they snap. We saw it happen with one of the Enron executives when the whole empire in Texas collapsed, and one of the Enron executives was facing prison time and disgrace, and he killed himself.
That's it, yeah.
So you can have those kinds of cases where people can't face the reality that they're about to encounter in their lives, the consequences of whatever. So there's that. And then there's the people who battle this for, in some cases, decades, and then are ultimately defeated by it.
Absolutely. So in those cases, people who have suffered from chronic depression or other type of mental illness, they probably contemplated it at different points. And then the reason, and this is kind of an interesting part of this, is that sometimes family members will say, well, but they started to look like they were better. And then all of a sudden, they attempted suicide. And I try to tell them, you know, they've been depressed for so long, no energy, no will. And as they start to get a little better, they finally have the energy to carry out this plan that they've been thinking about. And so usually it's like they start to look just a little better before they start to enact this plan. And also there might be a little bit of a relief, like sort of associated with the resoluteness of now I have a way to solve my problems finally. And it's usually accompanied by other things like having final conversations with family members, giving possessions away, you know, sort of thinking like sort of like sorting out their affairs. And so there are other warning signs, not just that they're getting better, but this is something that we've known for a long time, that when people do start to lift from a very deep and dark depression, that's actually sometimes one of the riskier points for a suicide attempt.
What should, you know, like so many things that we end up talking about in American life, it's only when a celebrity is impacted that it becomes a national conversation. And we've had, I don't know how many conversations over the years about the death toll of drugs and alcohol after some famous figure dies at a young age. And it's happened, I mean, the list is endless. But now we're having a conversation about suicide because we've had a series of famous personages off themselves. But in reality, this is a common problem. It's a problem that had stigma. The stigma, in many cases, contributed to the death toll because people were afraid to talk to people about it. They hid it from their loved ones. And I cannot emphasize again how easy it is for people with profound suicidal depression to hide it from people they're living with. I mean, it does happen where I know that it seems impossible, but I mean, like, for instance, with all these crazy school shooters, we always look at it and say, somebody had to know. Somebody had to know that this kid has gone off the rails. He's, you know, got a Hitler shirt. You know, he's got a T-shirt that says Born to Kill. How do the parents not know that their kid? Well, you know, post-mortem, things become clearer than they necessarily are in the active, busy lives that we lead.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, this is sort of what differentiates mental suffering from physical suffering. You know, people tend to be much more open about sharing that with their loved ones, you know, when they suffer from a physical ailment. And I really want to change the conversation because mental illness is a biologically based and medical disease, just like anything else. It's a disease of the brain. And I think that we need to start lifting that sort of idea that mental illness is sort of like a matter of a will, that somehow you have weak character if you have depression or anxiety or any kind of mental illness.
Well, there's a lot of, lots of stigma. Dr. Judy Ho, thank you so much for coming on with us. Follow her on Twitter at Dr. Judy Ho, H-O. It's that simple. Appreciate it very much you coming on with us.